Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Brian Westbrook joining us.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. You were
telling a joke. What up, Lee? How are you doing?
Right before we went on the air, you might as well share it with everyone.
Oh, no, I wasn't telling a joke. We have very funny producers on this television show. That's all. They just say things to me right before the show to try to make me laugh, and today they got it done.
Sometimes they do That's it all. While I'm talking.
Absolutely. Okay. So shout out to all the behind-the-scenes folks today.
I love it. We got a lot to get to on the program, and we are going to start with yesterday's big news in the NFL. After much speculation, the Carolina Panthers have fired their head coach, Ron Rivera, gone. He coached the team since 2011, including loss in Super Bowl 50, but he couldn't navigate a tough 5-7 season plagued by an injury to his star quarterback, Cam Newton. Well, Cam weighed in on Instagram saying this one hurt deep. Owner David Tepper explained his decision, saying, "I believe this is the best decision for the long-term success of our team. I have a great deal of respect for Ron and the contributions he has made to this franchise and to this community. I wish him the best. I will immediately begin the search for the next head coach of the Carolina Panthers." So, Nick, one thing leads to another. If Ron Rivera is gone, what does this mean for quarterback Cam Newton?
I think it opens up a window, however slight, that the Panthers do the smart thing and keep Cam as their quarterback next year. Quickly on Ron Rivera, though, he's an excellent coach. I know we'll talk about his future in a bit. I did not think he should have been fired. I certainly don't think he should have been fired midseason. I think it was a mistake by the new owner in Carolina, and one that is hard to justify given all that Ron Rivera's done for that franchise. Just my take on that, but he'll land on his feet, and I know we'll get into that. For Cam, if it's true, as what I heard some people speculating, more than speculating, seemed like informed speculating, people that had talked to people on the ground yesterday in Carolina, that they might want to go to one of these collegiate coaches, maybe a more wide open offensive model. If I'm the Carolina Panthers, I certainly would like to see if a healthy Cam Newton at a very reasonable $20 million cap hit next year, which is the Nick Foles range of quarterbacks in the modern era of paying quarterbacks, if he can work with that, how healthy he is. And if not, I would then look to the following year's draft, or maybe even this year's draft, with a year in waiting in mind for my next quarterback. So I think that the Panthers as an organization had basically decided we're moving on from the coach and the quarterback. But once you move on from the coach, what if the new coach says, "Well, I think I can work really well with Cam. I think some of these collegiate models we're seeing work really well with Cam's skill set." So I think the window is open slightly ajar to keeping Cam Newton in-house, because I don't think anyone's going to come in there and say, "Kyle Allen's going to be my quarterback." It's either Cam or through the draft. And Brian, even if it's through the draft, maybe you want to keep Cam Newton for the final year of his contract.
Yeah, I love the idea of keeping Cam Newton. I think when you have a veteran quarterback that has been through wars, a healthy Cam Newton. That's the biggest question. But when I hear the owner, David Tepper, say we're rebuilding, it's going to be messy, and it's a process, to me that all says that we're not going to keep Cam Newton. We're going to go and move on to a brand new coach as well as a brand new quarterback. And I think that can be a messy process. You have a lot of things going for you there in Carolina. The biggest thing is Christian McCaffrey. And if you go away from Cam Newton, you bring in a rookie quarterback, what are you going to do with him at that point? He's one of your stars in that city. That's something that you have to think about. You see what's going on in New York with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, and trying to match up the time that your star running back is going to have a quarterback that's capable of playing and helping them win. That's a messy process. And if you're talking about a 2-3-4 year process, why not keep Cam for a year, just like you're mentioning, groom a young quarterback, and then at that process, when that process is over, transition to that new process. That's the best way to do it, especially when you have a great weapon like Christian McCaffrey.
David Tepper also said that it was time because long-term mediocrity would not be tolerated. Do you think this has been a mediocre team the last couple of years? Well, or is the answer yes, because of the injuries plagued by Cam Newton?
Exactly right, Jenna. We need to understand what Ron Rivera and Cam Newton had done in Carolina the last half decade. They go 15-1 and go to the Super Bowl. The next year, they win the division and win a playoff game. The next year, they go 12-4 and get to the divisional round of the playoffs before losing a really good playoff game to Drew Brees and company in the New Orleans Saints. And then what happens? They're 6-2, and then Cam Newton gets his shoulder hurt, and since then it's been a disaster. They're 1-7 the rest of that year. They are this year they're 5-7 on the season. Like, that is what they've been throughout this Cam Newton era, as far as a couple, three division titles, if I'm not mistaken. They've been to the playoffs four times. They have been consistently in it when Cam's been healthy. And so I don't think you needed to rip it all down. But to your point, the new owner seems like he wants to rip it all down.
Yeah, he wants to rip it all down. Getting away from a coach that's going to bring you character, that's going to bring you consistency, that's going to bring you culture, that has NFL experience, it just doesn't always make sense at the middle point of the season. Here's the other thing. When you get embarrassed and lose to the Washington Redskins, yes, who are a historically bad football team over the last 15, 20 years, that's why these decisions actually happen. But you also got to wonder, what happened to that defense? When this team was good, that defense was rolling. They end up having Ron Rivera calling the defensive side of the ball. That defense still hasn't quite figured it out. Offensively, they were rolling when they had a run game and Cam was in that pocket throwing the football and running the football as well. We're not quite sure if the new coach will want Cam to run the football anymore. That's why I think Cam is probably done there in Carolina.
And what's the theme in the NFL? What have you done for me lately? They don't look at what he's done in the first couple of years of Ron Rivera's career and coaching career in Carolina. It was what was happened the last couple of years, regardless of whether it was because of Cam's injuries or not. I love Ron Rivera, too. I worked with Ron when he was, I think, the linebackers coach in Philadelphia. He's a strong guy. He's a great coach. You even said it. He's definitely going to land on his feet. Where do you think he could end up?
Well, I think right now the Dallas Cowboys and the Cleveland Browns should both be. There's no tampering with coaches. Well, even if there is, it doesn't matter because Ron Rivera's now been fired. Even though they are yet to fire Jason Garrett and Freddie Kitchens, those are two teams that are ready to win right now. Two teams that I believe have above average, if not better, quarterbacks. Two teams that have enough talent on the roster that if they just had better coaching would be not only in the playoff picture, but I think leading, potentially leading their respective divisions. Cleveland maybe not leading over Baltimore, but right there in the thick of the AFC playoff hunt. Those, a team like that needs a coach like this. And a team like that, I believe, could use a defensive-minded, hard-nosed head coach that says, hey, we're going to hire the offensive coordinator. His job is going to be the quarterback. My job is going to be everything else on the roster. So I wouldn't, if I were Dallas or Cleveland, try to go with a Lincoln Riley type, which maybe works, and maybe you're going after another coach in a couple years. I know Ron Rivera can coach in this league. I know that two teams that lack discipline, that lack attention to detail, could use a coach such as Ron Rivera. So those are two teams that I feel like we know the jobs are going to be open at the end of the year. I think they should start the bidding war right now for Ron Rivera, because one of them is, if they're smart, is going to get him, and one of them is going to be missing out.
You're absolutely right. Both of those teams, they need a defensive-minded coach. And I think when you talk about what's going on in Dallas, Kellen Moore has done a decent job of progressing Dak Prescott, but they both need discipline. Both of those teams, when you talk about the defensive side of the ball, and in Cleveland, offensive side of the ball, they need discipline. They need a guy that has pedigree in the NFL. And when you bring in one of these young coaches, there's a lot of veteran players that are always looking at him like, well, what does he know about the NFL? What does he know about what's going on in this league? But you bring in a guy like Ron Rivera, he's a guy that they're going to say, all right, it's no nonsense from day one. We're going to be disciplined. He has a pedigree as a player as well as a coach. He led his team to a Super Bowl in 2015. And at this point, now he has to go out there and continue to coach. And he will. He will continue to coach. And I was with him in Philadelphia as well. And he was a guy that was no nonsense. He led that linebacker group under Jim Johnson. And he's a guy that can go and change things in Cleveland as well as Dallas. And so both of those locations would be great for Ron Rivera.
Take a lot of discipline to change things in Cleveland right now. Just a little pop shot on our way to first break of the show. Chiefs versus Patriots. Patrick Mahomes versus Tom Brady. The new best versus the old best. Four-time MVP Tom Brady was asked about the reigning MVP in Patrick Mahomes, and here's what he had to say.
He's pretty spectacular. I think very highly of him and his skill set, and he's a very good player. And the reality is they have a very good team. They have a very good offense. They have very dynamic receivers, you know, one of the best groups in the league. They got one of the best tight ends in the league. They have some great running backs, and Patrick distributes the ball to all of them.
Nick, who do you trust more come Sunday? I almost say it laughing, but Mahomes or Brady?
I don't know how this can be a question in 2019. Patrick Mahomes, by the way, coming off the worst back-to-back games of his career, actually. And he was excellent in his first game back from the knee injury. Has not been as good the last two games. Oddly enough, the first game back when he was excellent, the Chiefs lost. The last two games when he wasn't that great, the Chiefs won, which speaks to potentially the slightly improving defense. But, of course, the answer is Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football. Now, he hasn't had the best season, and he's not going to win MVP, and he shouldn't, as of today, receive a single MVP vote. Not only because he got hurt, but because Lamar's been better and Russell's been better, and so I'm not arguing that. But Patrick Mahomes is the better quarterback now, and by the way, he was the better quarterback when the two met last year. And that, you're right, Jenna. I have had this game circled and the potential rematch in the playoffs since the moment the Chiefs lost the coin flip in the AFC Championship game. Not when they lost the game, when they lost the coin flip. Because when they lost the coin flip, I'm like, well, damn. Guess we're not going to the Super Bowl this year, boys. But in that AFC Championship game, it was Patrick Mahomes that led three separate fourth quarter comebacks. It was Patrick Mahomes that played the clean game with three touchdowns, zero picks. It was Tom Brady that had one touchdown, two picks, and should have had a third to end the game, but Dee Ford lined up a few inches offside. So this year, the answer is clearly Patrick Mahomes, and last year, the answer was Patrick Mahomes, even though his team didn't win those games.
Yeah, I think you would think that it would be clear. I don't know that it's just that clear. This is what I know about the New England Patriots at home. They've won 21 straight, including the playoffs, going back to last year. They're really good at home. Yep. This year, that defense has only given up two touchdowns with seven interceptions. So they get after the quarterback. They attack the football. And the last three quarterbacks that have played there in New England have only averaged 189 yards passing in the football game. That's how good that defense is on the at home in particular. Sure. And so when you talk about Mahomes, Brady, you certainly have to factor in the defense that they're playing. I have no faith in Kansas City in this new defense that has produced a bunch of turnovers. Tyrann Mathieu has been great. However, I'm not sure that they can do that going on the road, going into Foxborough and winning there. That's a different thing for that football team. I'm not so sure that I would take Mahomes over Brady. In fact, I would take Brady over Mahomes in this
because
matchup.
Because Mahomes has to go against the Patriots defense.
Exactly. It's based
Brady
on the defense.
Brady gets to go against the Chiefs.
That's right.
But, you know, the Patriots defense hasn't looked as great the last couple of weeks. And the Chiefs defense has looked better the last couple of weeks. So do you see that evening out a little bit better?
Well, listen, the Patriots defense, you're right, Jenna. What they've gone from is one of the best defenses ever through the first 2 months of the season to one of the two best defenses in football. And what the Chiefs defense has done is gone from one of the three worst defenses in the league to maybe one of the eight worst defenses in the league. Like now last week, this most recent game, they played excellent start to finish against the Oakland Raiders. And the very end of the Charger game, they played well. But overall, I don't think the Chiefs yet can even claim to have an average defense.
They played two teams that have been struggling a little bit offensively.
100%. And in the Chargers, a quarterback that's been very turnover prone. And in the Raiders, who all of a sudden, the last 2 weeks, their season just fell apart, losing to the Jets and the no-showing against Kansas City. I just don't think the Patriots' defensive personnel matches up well with Kansas City's offensive personnel at all. Why was Houston successful? Speed, speed, speed. Nobody has more speed than the Kansas City Chiefs. Tyreek Hill lit up the Patriots in their first matchup last year. In the second matchup, they said, we're going to take Tyreek Hill away. He only made one big play. The Chiefs still scored 31 second half points. How? Because Sammy Watkins came to play. Because they got other people involved. Now, Watkins has basically been a no-show. So after week one of the year, he was unbelievable. Since then, he's been very mediocre in production. But I don't think you are going to be able to slow down substantially the Chiefs' offense. Now, the Patriots should be able to hold them under 30. My question is, if the Chiefs don't allow a defensive or special team score, how many points can the Patriots score, particularly if Tom Brady has struggled all year when he's pressured? The Chiefs defense last year and this year, when it has struggled, even when it struggled, they still can get to the opposing quarterback. Chris Jones, when he's on the field, that defense creates pressure on the opposing quarterback. Tom Brady, a 49 passer rating this year when pressured. If the Chiefs can get pressure on Brady, how are the Patriots going to be able to score past the teens into the at least the mid-20s, which I think they're going to have to be able to win this game?
Yeah, that's the big question. Who are the Patriots going to go to? They don't, of course, have the security blanket in Rob Gronkowski, the guy that you can say he's an instant mismatch on every situation. That means they have to find a way to get the ball to James White out of the backfield, get him to football in the backfield as well as far as running the football. And Julian Edelman, those are their only two weapons. But on the other side, when you think about it for Kansas City, and this is what has given the Patriots problem. Three fast receivers. We saw it last week, Fuller, Steele, as well as Hopkins. Three guys that can run. The Chiefs don't have three guys that can run. They have guys that have done it well in the past, Sammy Watkins, but they depend on Travis Kelce as well as Tariq Hill. That's it. And the other guys have not produced. Three targets last week for Sammy Watkins, zero catches. They have to have another guy. And because of that, that's why I think the Patriots can slow them down.
The other guy that I wonder if it's going to be is rookie Mecole Hardman, the guy that they drafted when they thought Tyreek Hill might be out of football. And Mecole Hardman has had some really big games. This past week, he and Sammy Watkins were essential no-shows in that football game. You mentioned how you stopped the Patriots. Just tell me this quickly here, because I know we have to move on. Why would every team not do what Houston did? Because Houston's defense, by the way, not any better than Kansas City's. Double Edelman, put a corner on James White, dare the other people to beat you. Like, isn't that the way you take away the two weapons Tom Brady can rely on and you make him go to either the rookies or Mohamed Sanu?
That's the best way to do it. How you answer to that is you run the football. You get Sony Michel involved just a bit. And that was something they went to towards the end of the season last year. I'm not sure that that's what they're going to this year with the questions with the offensive line, but that's how you answer that type of defense.
And we'll preview much more of this game coming up over the course of the week. The other thing is smallest coaching discrepancy maybe between these two head coaches. Well, so one's not going to get out-coached the way we've seen with the Patriots.
And the last time there wasn't a big coaching discrepancy with John Harbaugh, the Ravens whooped them.
Situational football.
All right, moving on to the Lakers.
Physical?
No.
Who snapped their one-game losing streak. Mm-hmm. They took down the Nuggets on the road last night, 105-96. LeBron and AD totally in sync. Here's how I know. Both with 25 points, both on 9 of 18 shooting, both made 6 free throws, both had 3 fouls, both played 37 minutes. Keep in mind, AD did this while battling flu-like symptoms before the game. Nick Wright, how confident are you in the Lakers as they continue this tough stretch of their schedule right now?
Well, I was incredibly confident before last night's game. But I was very interested in watching last night's game because the Lakers had clearly come out and said, this is an important one for us. Mm-hmm. Not just because they'd come off a loss, but because they heard what everyone's saying, that all of a sudden strength of schedule is not just a college football argument, but it's going to be an NBA argument. That all of a sudden, I'm very excited, and they are too, I'm sure, for the narrative after a decade it was, LeBron is feasting on the least of the East. Wait about 2 more weeks. And what you're going to start hearing is, I can already see the columns from our friend Chris Mannix on SI.com. You know, don't look now, but has the East overtaken the West as the more dominant kind? Is the West watered down this year? Because you've got to find a justification for LeBron going to LA and after a year ruined by injury, running roughshod over the conference. But the Lakers knew the importance of this game. Denver is the team that's second place in the West right now, Brian. And what they did was, after falling down 5-0, they led every other minute of the game except for a 19-second mini stretch in the third quarter. They essentially led it wire to wire. LeBron and AD were LeBron was good. AD was spectacular because even though, Jenna, to your point, that LeBron and AD had the same offensive lines, Anthony Davis's defense was out of this world. Nikola Jokic would have rather spent 60 minutes on a treadmill than do what he did last night against Anthony Davis. And it was a great, dominant win, even if the final margin wasn't dominant, because they were in total control throughout the entire basketball game. Now, they got a really tough back-to-back at Utah tonight, so we'll see if they can bring that same intensity. But this was a good check mark in the season.
And we should add that not only did he have flu-like symptoms, AD had to have an IV in his arm at halftime just to have the energy to come back out and play in the second half.
The dominant teams, the best teams in NBA history, have been able to turn it on and off whenever they want to. The Lakers still have that same ability. They have the ability to say, okay, for these next 12 minutes, we're going to play defense. We're going to just hustle on defense, get some fast break buckets. You talk about what the Lakers are doing. I love the fact that they are third in the league in fast break buckets. They are getting down the floor, getting easy buckets for LeBron, AD. The other part that they're doing that I love is that they're second in points in the paint. They're getting the ball down low. They're getting contributions from, of course, Anthony Davis, but also Dwight Howard. You're getting points down
low. Dwight was excellent.
Yeah, and that's what's going to continue to help them to grow. LeBron, you know, he is special. We all know that, and he can turn it on. But he's getting the ball to everyone around him, allowing the other guys to help them win basketball games. That's going to allow him to have more longevity. And when you talk about winning basketball games, they're talking about going into the postseason with home court advantage. That's why they're playing so hard right now. That's why they're doing all these things, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I don't see that changing, especially on this road stand.
And the single toughest back-to-back in the NBA right now is at Denver, at Utah. Most teams never do it. The Lakers got to do it right now. Mm-hmm. The reason it's so tough is the altitude in Denver. It's a really, really good team. That home court advantage in Utah might be the best in the whole sport. And so some would say Lakers-Clippers is the toughest back-to-back, but there's no travel involved in that. If you might be the two better teams, there's no travel. If the Lakers sweep this back-to-back, I don't want to hear another mumbling word about the schedule, because we're a quarter of the way through the season. They got the best record in the NBA. I'll be very interested if they come out with the same level of intensity tonight, or if they look at it as we almost did, like in a playoff series, when you take the first game on the road, we got the split, we did what we came here to do. I'm curious to see how they look tonight, but last night they were great.
They seemed very hungry.
Your two favorite players, Giannis and Lakers, both Bucks and Lakers tied for the best record in the league.
Absolutely.
Back to the NFL. Tough times for the Dallas Cowboys these days. The team is struggling. The coach is on the hot seat. And Jerry Jones is woefully unsatisfied. Yesterday, when asked again about Jason Garrett's status, Jones chose his words carefully. Said Garrett will be coaching, quote, in the NFL next year. Didn't say Cowboys. Said the NFL.
What a quote.
All right, Nick, you had Cowboys legend Terrell Owens on your SiriusXM radio show last night, and he said Garrett was to blame for the Cowboys' struggles.
You have to attribute that to the head coach. Again, you can't just point fingers at the players. The players are really a byproduct of the coach. You're only going to do and go as far as your head coach leads you. It's been the same old story, you know, with Jason Garrett and the Dallas Cowboys team year after year after year. I've been saying it since I left, and I haven't backed away from it. So, again, at the end of the day, Jerry has to, at some point, bite the bullet and understand that this guy, he is not the answer.
Nick, is T.O. right? Is this on Jason Garrett?
It's not only that T.O.'s right. The owner clearly agrees with him, Brian.
Yeah.
With that
now,
comment.
We might say T.O. has an axe to grind. T.O., he said there, he's like, I've been saying this for years. Listen, we know, and I appreciate T.O. coming on the show last night. T.O. don't like Jason Garrett.
Right.
And so this is not a non-biased observer. But we know Jerry Jones agrees with him, because that quote is wild. If somebody asked my boss at FS1, what if my contract's expiring, what's Nick Wright's future look like? And he says, I'm sure he'll be on TV somewhere next year. Man, I am preparing
goner,
my metaphorical
Nick.
Resume. And here's the reason, Brian, that Jerry and T.O. and everyone has to blame the coach. It's really hard to blame the roster. And Jerry can't blame the roster, because he and his son picked the roster. Mm-hmm. And paid the roster, and are bringing the roster back next season. So if you're going to bring back definition of insanity, doing the same thing again and again, expecting different results, if you're going to have the same human beings involved from a player standpoint, the only way to expect different results is to get different coaches involved from a coaching standpoint. So yeah, T.O.'s right that the lion's share of this falls on Jason Garrett's shoulders, because you can't blame Dak. He's having the best year of his career the last couple weeks, notwithstanding, and the rest of the roster is pretty damn good.
When you think about coaching, so there's a lot of different ways to coach. You're talking about the players coach. The guys are just so nice to the players. The players kind of run over them just a little bit. The other side to that is a disciplinarian. You're talking about Tom Coughlin, a guy that's saying, be there 15 minutes early or you're late. And so I don't know that Jason Garrett is certainly not a disciplinarian. He's more closer to the players coach that guys can count on. It seems right now the people in Dallas, the players in Dallas, they need more of a disciplinarian. A guy that's going to kick him in the butt and say, listen, this is the way we're going to do things, Ron Rivera. era. This is the way we're going to do things, and we're going to do it this way. If you're not marching to that beat, then at that point, you're out. And so if you're talking about Jason Garrett, things get stale. The messages get stale. I remember when Andy Reid was in Philadelphia, as good of a coach as he is now in Kansas City, there was a point in Philadelphia where the message got stale for the players, even though he is a great coach. He went to Kansas City, turned that thing around. The message in Dallas certainly has got stale. I got a problem with Jerry Jones, though. This team is still in the playoff hunt. This team still has the opportunity to win that division. And last week you said, I'm going on TV and I'm blaming the coach for the miscues on the special teams. It was obvious the coach should have told him, scoot up some and, you know, try to catch the football, all those things. That's obvious. But when your team still has the ability to make the playoffs, you don't go on TV and say, we're going to blame the coach and all these different things. You don't go on the TV and say, well, he's going to be coaching in the NFL somewhere, because now the players in the locker room hear that and they're like, well, listen, we're not going to listen to this guy anymore. And they're already not listening to him. And so that's a point as the owner, you have to say, I need to step back. Maybe I don't need to say anything. That's a big question when you talk about Ron Rivera and other coaches going there. Do you want to deal with Jerry Jones?
Jenna, he turned the head coach into a substitute teacher.
100%.
Right.
Like, when you say that, I mean, nobody can... There's no way around that quote from Jason, which is why, like, from Jerry about Jason, pardon me. And so, which is why, even if you think, well, T.O.'s not a unbiased observer, he is saying what Jerry Jones is, to me, clearly thinking.
Well, this is the closest that Jerry's come to saying, this is it for Jason Garrett. I'm not doing it now, but I will do it. But all the things that both of you said Jason Garrett isn't, Ron Rivera could easily be in that spot. He could be a disciplinarian. He could also have a new, fresh message to those players. He can get a roster that's very good already and get them to play up to their potential.
Yeah, to me, this is a no-brainer. And coaches as good as Ron Rivera don't often come available. I think Ron Rivera is better than Mike McCarthy. I know Mike McCarthy won a Super Bowl. I think Ron Rivera has done more with less in Carolina than Mike McCarthy, who did a little less with more, having Aaron Rodgers that whole time in Green Bay. And it's the exact type of coach you need. And I don't think the Cowboys, I don't think it'd be in their interest to take a big swing on a first-time NFL head coach, even if that swing is Lincoln Riley, who's going to have a bunch of teams offering him $8-plus million a year maybe to leave Oklahoma, because you don't have time for the learning pains. You are not starting fresh. Now, the New York Giants, if they could get Lincoln Riley, maybe that makes sense. They are in rebuild mode. They've been terrible for a few years. Now they got a second year. They will have a second year quarterback. Team like that. Washington, you know what I mean? A team that is not ready to compete. The Cowboys are ready to compete for a championship. And so I don't think you can go with the sexy hire. I think you got to go with someone that is established and who will focus on some of these coaching hires, Brian, it's like they are hired to coach the quarterback and the rest of the team will figure itself out. If you hire Ron Rivera, you can say he's going to coach everything but the quarterback, and we're going to hire an offensive coordinator specifically for our quarterback.
The Dallas defense, they're missing a bunch of tackles and they're undisciplined. Who better than an old-time linebacker played with the Chicago Bears to lead that defense, which you mentioned. He has pedigree. He also has accountability. He can build a culture in that locker room that they sorely need and some discipline. This is a perfect hire for the Dallas Cowboys.
And the killer for the Cowboys, Jenna, is they don't have a single victory to hang their hat on. Even Philadelphia, as disappointing as they've been, at least they can still say to each other, even if it's lies, when we play our best, you know what we can do? We can go to Green Bay and win. Mediocre, underachieving teams usually lose some games they shouldn't, but also occasionally play up to their caliber. The Cowboys don't have a single game this year where it's like, look at how good we are when we play our
best.
They
have a couple of ones where they could say, look how bad we are.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Look at
that
Jets game and say, look, this is how bad we could be.
But they don't have
really try to underachieve.
Have the opposite of it.
Here First Things First, now joined by former NFL head coach Eric Mangini. Good morning, coach.
Good morning.
Good to have you this morning.
Good morning.
All right, we're talking Philadelphia Eagles. To say the Eagles have underwhelmed this season would be an understatement. Their 5-7 record hit its low point with a loss to the Dolphins on Sunday. Doug Peterson has taken the blame, saying, I'm disgusted, I'm mad, I'm angry, and I'm probably more so mad at myself. Eagles could have tied the Cowboys atop the division with a win against Miami. Instead, they are back to the drawing board with just four games left to play. Brian, you're a resident Eagle guy on set here. Who is to blame? Is it Peterson or is it quarterback Carson Wentz?
You know, while Carson Wentz has not played great, Coach, five touchdowns and three interceptions in the last three games, I place this last loss to Miami at the feet of Doug Peterson. Here's the thing. You're going down to Miami to play a 2-9 football team, and you don't have your team prepared. You don't have your team amped and ready to go down there and win a football game. And this is why you should. You have five games left, and if you win those five games, you can make it into the playoffs. That's the thing that all coaches, that all players, that's your goal at the beginning of the season, to make it into the playoffs. And these guys weren't prepared. They were not ready. 10 penalties in a football game. That's coaching. That's discipline. I put that squarely at the feet of Doug Peterson. Here's a couple things that I want to point out, and this is important. Carson Wentz in his passing attempts, last three games against New England, 40 passing attempts. Seattle, 45. Miami, 46 passing attempts. In these games, he was never down by more than 7 points. Run the doggone football. 18 carries, 18 carries, 19 carries. You have an opportunity as a play caller, Doug Peterson, to run the football. Your most explosive player on offense is your running back, Miles Sanders. He's been your most consistent and your most explosive player on offense. Why are you not running the football, especially when your quarterback is basically 2-13 when he passes over 40 times a football game? That's not how you win, especially with the receivers that you have. Doug Peterson continues to knock his head against the wall trying to give the ball to Carson Wentz and win football games that way. That's not the way the Eagles will win football games.
And when you hear him talking in the press conference, he said he's mad, he's disappointed, he's all these different things. What is he mad at? I would like a little bit of clarity. What is he disappointed in? Does he feel like he didn't put a good enough game plan in place? Does he feel like he didn't have enough discipline during the course of the week? Does he feel like he's had some shortcomings as a program in terms of discipline? The difficult thing is when you have success like they had success and you win a Super Bowl and it's with a philosophy of maybe a lighter environment, we're all gonna have fun. We've talked about that a ton, and then you double down the next year. It's hard now to change directions and tell everybody in that locker room, we have to take a different approach. We have to be harder. We have to be not who we have been. Because the guys look at you and say, well, if that was good enough before, why isn't it good enough now?
Like, I don't know in your household who the disciplinarian is. Maybe it's both parents. My guess is it's you. So I'm not in mine. And my wife's the much more strict parent. I'm the more, listen, kids, it is. Right.
And party dad.
Right. And occasionally, if I get angry or I get upset and I try to be strict, my youngest daughter will laugh.
Yes, she laughs at you.
She will laugh.
Yep.
What are you talking about? And there is, and I understand that's not a perfect analogy, but it seems to be what you're talking about. Like, you establish with young people or with a young football team who you're going to be, and that is who they believe you to be moving forward. The only issue I'll take with what you said, Brian, is I did think Philly was ready to play. They were up 10-0. They were then up 14 points in the second half. And to allow Ryan Fitzpatrick and those Miami Dolphins, and credit to Brian Flores, who has his team still fighting. Yeah. The organization might want to tank. He ain't part of it, and the players don't seem to be. The players that are left don't seem to be a part of it. To allow them to score 23 straight points, that's why I can't put it on Wentz. Wentz has been bad this year, but given his standards, and honestly, he's been league standards, a below average quarterback this season. He needs to be better.
Yep.
He, to whom much given, much is expected. He's got the big contract extensions, never played in a playoff game. He needs to be better. But the Miami game individually, 30 against Miami should be enough. That should be enough points to win that football game. Up 14 against Miami in what I would consider close to a must-win game. They saw, like the whole world saw, their division rival fall flat on their face on Thanksgiving. They knew what was in front of them. And to have the game won and then to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory the way they did defensively in that second half, to me is almost unforgivable. And that is that we can't put on the right arm of Carson Wentz.
The Miami Dolphins scored on 6 straight possessions. 5 of those possessions were touchdowns. At some point, your coach, and I know Doug is not a defensive coach, but at some point, your coach has to make an adjustment. And coach, you have to understand this, that Devontae Parker is the one guy that's killing you. Maybe we should just double team him. Maybe if you have a situation where your special teams is out there and it's a formation that you may not recognize, even if you do, maybe it's a special formation, maybe you should just call a timeout. These are small things that Doug Peterson could have done in this football game that he didn't do, and he has to just do a better job of coaching. And when you talk about Carson Wentz, Nick, the turnovers have been his issue. Yes. Last game, 4 turnovers. He has to be a much more accurate passer. If he can do that with his fundamentals and his mechanics, then he'll play much better. They have to get some guys around him. All the good teams that have great receivers around them that are playing the best on offense, they have speed. The Eagles have no speed at all.
Could just explain this to me. If you're a head coach, how do you pivot from where your message point was? If you were one team and it's not working, how do you get in touch with the guys? They're not firing Doug Peterson. This is going to be the same group of guys for the next 4 games. How do you suddenly say, we blew it? Because he did say after that Dolphins game, we just didn't try hard enough. He literally said, we didn't try hard enough, and they did. Tell me how you pivot on message points to a group of guys.
That's my point. It's really hard to pivot because you've spent a lot of time saying, this is what I believe in. This is how we're going to operate. The Patriots do things their way. That's okay, but we're going to show the world that we can do things a different way. And then you have some success, and then you double down and you sneak into the playoffs the next year.
And win a playoff game.
And win a playoff game, and now you're at the point where you do have to change because it's constantly evolving. But everybody in that locker room is saying, this is what you told us worked. We saw that it worked. This is the guy you said you are, and now you want to be somebody different? I don't know how he's going to be able to pivot, especially in this short amount of time, to try to do something effective.
And organizationally, this went under the radar. But this week, in the midst of all of this, they made Lane Johnson the highest paid right tackle ever. Mm-hmm. And Lane Johnson's been one of the most vocal, I'd rather have fun, you know, it was a tongue-in-cheek quote that now gets thrown in his face a lot, but I'd rather have fun and win one Super Bowl than be miserable and win a bunch. And now Lane is a great player, one of the best in the league at his position. He is wildly important for Carson Wentz, but you do wonder if maybe that contract extension could have been agreed to, but just put on hold, maybe temporarily, because I wonder what the message it does send to the locker room. If you are trying to, you know, turn the tanker a bit as far as the direction and mentality of the team, when one of the standard bearers of the mentality they had a few years ago gets $80 million.
If the coach can't change who he is, that means the veterans in the locker room need to step up and do a little bit more. That's who I would lean on.
Well, I think he can change. I just don't know if they're going to take him seriously.
Back to the big story of the day. The Carolina Panthers have fired head coach Ron Rivera. Rivera, who coached the team since 2011, including a loss in Super Bowl 50, just couldn't navigate a tough 5-7 season plagued by an injury to his star quarterback, Cam Newton. On Instagram, Cam wrote, "This one hurt deep." Owner David Tepper explained his decision, saying, "I believe this is the best decision for the long-term success of our team. I have a great deal of respect for Ron and the contributions he has made to this franchise and to this community. I wish him the best. I will immediately begin the search for the next head coach of the Carolina Panthers." All right, Nick, what do you think this means for Cam Newton? Because the two are really paired.
Well, I think ostensibly it would appear move on from the coach, about to move on from the quarterback, fresh start for everything, and the quotes from the owner, as you've pointed out, Brian, lead you to believe that. But I would imagine that whoever takes this head coaching job is going to want to have the biggest say in who the quarterback of the team is. And I think there are a lot of coaches, particularly if you pull from the college ranks, that might say, all right, even if we are drafting a quarterback, Cam has a year left on his deal, is an incredibly reasonable cap number in today's dollars, $20 million for next season, and a lot of the things Cam Newton does well are those RPOs, some of the collegiate stuff that we're seeing, whether Arizona do with Kyler Murray, or he's not Lamar, but some of the stuff Lamar does. And so why don't we wait and see what this final year of his contract, Cam Newton, would look like in a new offense with a new coaching staff with a healthy foot and healthy shoulder for the first time in a few years. So I do think the window is at least slightly open for Cam to stay with the Carolina Panthers. Now, I don't know if Cam wants to. If you're Cam Newton, you're the best player in the history of the franchise, and they have been essentially pushing you out the door because you got hurt. But I don't think the door is totally closed yet, and I'm certain the next whoever comes in is not going to say, well, Kyle Allen is the guy I want to ride with for the next decade.
Well, David Tepper obviously wants to put his stamp on the organization. He said that. He's talked about the change he made to the business staff, and now he's making changes to the football side. And part of that could be getting a new quarterback, getting his franchise quarterback. We're going to learn a lot more about this as the interview process starts, because he'll have an idea of what he wants to hear from those candidates. And if he is a big Cam supporter, he's going to want to hear a guy who says, let me go ahead and give Cam the best possible shot. And if he wants to move on to a different guy, that's going to be the type of head coach that he hires. I don't think it's done for Cam in Carolina in terms of it being a certainty. But I would imagine they're trying to rebrand this whole organization with this move, and part of that rebranding is probably moving on from him longer term.
Yeah, Cam has been the face of that organization for a long time, but the biggest question about Cam is how healthy is he, and can he remain healthy? That's the biggest question. The only thing that has stopped Cam throughout his career is his health. And so the next coach is going to come in and say, all right, this is what I want to do. I want to be able to run those RPOs. I want to be able to sprint the quarterback out and get him outside of the pocket and throw the football. And can Cam do that for 16 games? Because if he can, then you have the opportunity to draft a young quarterback and say, okay, you just groom yourself under Cam. We got him under contract for a reasonable price. And at that point, you groom your young quarterback. You groom him with Christian McCaffrey as well. And then you find a way to get rid of Cam at the end of the season. But if Cam plays well, you keep him. So if you're a new coach, there's nothing better than having a veteran quarterback in your locker room that has been there and done that if he's healthy. That's the biggest question.
The only thing that I'd say, if you're going to try to go to the Baltimore RPO heavy run quarterback run system like that, when you're Cam Newton, you're not interested in doing that. That's not you're making $19 million next year with a chance to make significantly more. You're not interested in carrying the ball 20 times a game, and especially after you've had a history of injuries, that's the last thing you want to do, is be put in that position. If you're going to run that system, you need to go get a young guy that's willing to do that and put himself in that situation.
Well, that's just it. We're all assuming that he's going to recover fully from this Lisfranc injury, and that his shoulder is going to be 100% fine, and that whatever tinkering they did with his throwing motion is suddenly all going to fall into place. Those are a lot of ifs to see if you're going to get the same Cam Newton, or even close to the same Cam Newton, who's willing or able to run all the RPOs. But my question is, how does the timing work out with all that? Are you going to have time to know whether he's healthy by the time you get a new head coach in, by the time the draft rolls around? I mean, there's a lot of things that have to fall into place.
Yeah, but you said we're all assuming something. I'm not assuming any of that. Well, I'm reading the NFL and the world that exists where Nick Foles gets $88 million on speculation. There are the known quantity quarterbacks in this league are never available. Mm-hmm. The last one that was Kirk Cousins, and he's a slight known quantity, and he got a fully guaranteed contract. Why? Because you never have a guy that you know is healthy and at the very least above average that comes available at this position. So, yeah, there are some assumptions that are baked into these things, and I think Coach is right. I think the best point was, yes, the next head coach is going to get to pick the quarterback, but the next head coach might be picked based on his thoughts on the quarterback, because it's going to be communicated in the interview process, and that's a really good point that I hadn't really thought about it crystallized that way. I also think the next head coach, if I had to bet, is not going to be as good or as successful as Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera's there for 9 years. I would argue they underachieved twice. The year after the Super Bowl, where they had a clear hangover, Cam was not as good. They won 6 games. The one other year they underachieved was in between 12 and 15 win seasons, when they went 7-8-1. And even that year, though, they won the division and won a playoff game. You find me the year where, like, well, Panthers weren't good enough. They were a one-win team that then won 6. They then improved to 7. Then 12 wins and a bye. Then the 7-win season I mentioned. 15-1. The 6-win season I mentioned. 11-5. Last year, they're 6-2. And Cam gets hurt. This year, Cam gets hurt. There's not, and they still have won 5 games.
They're the only team that hasn't had consecutive winning seasons since 1995.
And how many winning seasons are there total in that list?
There's 3. But how many of those years?
Out of how many years?
Out of 9.
9.
How many years?
And didn't they have the NFL MVP?
Yeah, and they went 15-1.
So they overachieved?
Two-time coach of the year.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, but what year? I mean,
I like Ron Rivera too. But when you treat Jason Garrett pretty harshly for the mediocre season they're having,
yep.
And but you had a 7-8-1 where you go to the playoffs, you're like, oh yeah.
But Jason Garrett, but Jason Garrett does not get criticized for the 4-12 year when what happened? When his quarterback got hurt. You look at what Ron Rivera did. The first 2 years, they're building from a 1-15 team. They then win 12 games, win the division, 15 games, a terrible 6-win season, 11 games, and play a great playoff game against the Saints. And last year, they're 6-2. He had a stretch of five seasons of tremendous success, the closest you can come to without winning a Super Bowl. And then Cam got hurt. And so, like, that is the line of demarcation. Now, if you want to argue they should have had a better backup plan in store this season, fine. So be it. But I thought they were overachieving this year until this last month of football. And I think Ron Rivera was ahead of the curve on analytics. I think he is, when I watch league-wide, he doesn't make game management gaffes like so many of these guys do. And the Cowboys have, to me, underachieved given talent. The Panthers have overachieved given talent, in my eye.
That's your biggest point. The Cowboys have underachieved given the talent that they have on that football team at this point. And Jason Garrett hasn't got the most out of the talent. I would argue that Ron Rivera got the most that he possibly could out of the talent that he had there in Carolina. That football team was a good team. They had the injuries. You talked about the injury to the linebacker core as well as the injury to the quarterback, both of the quarterback, the head of their respective side of the ball. Those are big issues for those guys in Carolina. Ron Rivera was a good coach. He wasn't able to win those big games, but he didn't also have any special players on his offense besides Cam Newton and, at this point, Christian McCaffrey.
Well, you do have the NFL MVP. That's a pretty special player in the hierarchy of special players. And I'm not trying to kill Ron Rivera. I like Ron Rivera. It's just when we use a criteria of 3 winning seasons out of 9 years as a benchmark of overachieving, and then you beat up someone like Jason Garrett and saying he's underachieving, even though he's won division titles and his success rate is arguably just as good.
Okay, but we can. It depends on what you want to say. 3 winning seasons out of 9 years is true. We also could say has been to the divisional round at least or further 3 times out of 9 years. Has been to a Super Bowl when one guy has not been to a conference championship game. And Jenna, the stat you gave, which is the Panthers are the only team in football to not have a consecutive winning season since 1995, that to me speaks to my point, because the first 15 years of that, he's not there. It is not a franchise with a history of success. The longest history of consistency, of consistent relevancy and success, has been under Ron Rivera. And you said they had the league MVP, and they've been damn good when the league MVP has been healthy. What happened was the league MVP got hurt. You can't justify the 2016 6-10 season. I get it. Super Bowl hangover or not, that shouldn't happen. But every other year, this team has overachieved its talent level to my eye, and the one year their MVP played like an MVP, they're a possession away from winning the Super Bowl, and he doesn't get to finish the season. I just think it's a bad move by them.
All right, we got a break. Nick, who do you trust more on Sunday, Mahomes or Brady?
Well, I just saw Tom Brady against a defense that is bottom 5 against the pass, bottom 5 on third down, bottom 5 in the red zone, and bottom 5 at getting to the opposing quarterback.
How'd he do?
And through 3.5 quarters, he was terrible. And I've seen Patrick Mahomes throughout his brief but spectacular career just have, honestly, the worst 2-game stretch he's had in his career. And it's a 2-game stretch this year that Tom Brady would climb over mountains for. Because right now you have one player who is ascending towards all-time great status, and you have another player who is the all-time greatest who has descended below league average status. So even though the Patriots secondary is exceptional, the one thing we've seen as of late is they struggle with speed. Nobody's got more speed than the Kansas City Chiefs, and they played them twice last year. And in week 6 in New England, and in the AFC Championship game in Kansas City, while New England won both those games, I'm aware of how they ended, in both those games, the Kansas City Chiefs scored 31 second half points. The reason they didn't win those games is a lot of things, but one could say is slow starts. That's not going to happen again this weekend. And of course, you trust Patrick Mahomes, who is the most talented player in the league, against Tom Brady, who once upon a time was the best player in the league, but that time is a few years removed from now.
So yesterday, Lamar Jackson was the most talented player in the league.
No, I did not say that. Now, that's today, not what I said.
Patrick
I said he's
Mahomes
the MVP.
The most,
There's a
most
difference.
Talented player, but he's not the most talented player. Okay. And so the last game that you talked about with Tom Brady, you said you listed his stats, and that's problematic, right? Because that defense is so bad. Yet when Patrick Mahomes has his worst two-game stretch. We don't really take that into account. That's just a little bit of an aberration. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, because over the course of the season, he's got 20 touchdowns, two picks, and a 108 rating. So,
okay,
yeah.
But in back-to-back games, he's, what, 20% below his quarterback rating? He's 10% below his completion rating? So he's really trending upwards.
No, he's had a bad 2 weeks.
Okay. So then we talk about the games against New England, and you keep coming back to the second half. Is he going to be able to put together a good first half? Is he going to be able to come out and figure out what New England's doing? Or is he just going to have to run around and try to figure out a way to get guys open because he has no idea how to diagnose the coverages? Now, I think Patrick Mahomes is incredibly talented. I think their offense is explosive. I think the thing that he has to show is that he can look at what's in front of him, be able to diagnose it effectively, and not have to keep waiting till the second half to try to make a dramatic comeback.
I'm going to go Tom Brady here, and I agree with you, Coach. I think Patrick Mahomes is a special player, but walking into Foxborough, where they've won 21 straight, including the playoffs, it's just hard to do. It's a certain when you walk in there and you're looking at the banners up there, you're talking about a ring ceremony, you see Tom Brady on the other sideline. That's just a daunting task for anyone, and Patrick Mahomes has proven that he can win in certain situations, but that defense that the Patriots have, they're special. They've only given up two touchdowns and seven interceptions at home this season. They know how to get after a quarterback in a way. And the one thing that they do better than anyone is adjust. Adjust to what you're doing and take away what you do well. Just imagine if they take away the big play down the field from Tyreek Hill. Now, what do the Kansas City Chiefs go to? Do they go to a run game? That's been non-existent. Do they just throw the ball to Travis Kelce? He's a great option, but can you somehow double team him? There's a lot of different things that you can do to slow down this Kansas City Chiefs offense. That's why I'm leaning towards more of Tom Brady than anything.
But I'm just curious. I just want to know, if Brady struggles against this very mediocre Chiefs defense, it's not going to be because of him, though. It's the weapons. If Brady plays well, it's because he's great. And if he struggles, though, it's that, well, listen, Julian Edelman, who I'm told is a fringe Hall of Famer, James White is one of the best pass-catching running backs in the league, and a first-round pick at wide receiver, another first-round pick at running back. It's not enough. It's not fair to ask Tom Brady against the 32nd-ranked Houston Texans red zone defense and 28th-ranked Houston Texans passing defense and 31st-ranked Houston Texans third-down defense to do more. But I just don't know what the rules of engagement are for this as far as what I'm expecting to see on Sunday afternoon.
There's always been a sliding scale.
I'm saying when half the team flies down a different plane because they've had the flu, of course we don't take that into account because the Patriots, they always overcome it. When it's your third center, you don't look at it. It's the Patriots. They always overcome it. When you lose your starting tight end, when you lose your backup
tight end. He retired.
Well, no, I'm talking about James Devlin.
Okay, so you lose James Devlin. Gotcha.
Well, he's a fullback tight end hybrid.
Gotcha, sorry.
When you have the transition, the young players that they have, and we have such a high expectation of them being able to overcome every challenge that they're graded on a different curve. And if you put Patrick Mahomes on New England's offense,
they win the Super Bowl going away. If you put Patrick Mahomes on a team with that defense, they win the Super Bowl going away.
I want to know Patrick Mahomes offensively. What would that
without
performance look like?
Without those
weapons. He is with with New England's offensive group. It's Patrick Mahomes. Tell me what that looks like.
Okay, I'll tell you what it looks like. You know what? Philip Dorsett becomes a legitimate deep threat. And N'Keal Harry has the type of season Mecole Hardman's having now that he's back in the lineup. And we're not whining about the lack of a fullback because if you have Patrick Mahomes on your team, you're not trying to run some I formation 1960s offense. You're throwing the ball around the field. They ran the reason the center, the blocking tight end, and the fullback are so desperately important is because you got a 42-year-old man at quarterback, so you have to lean on the run game. They would love. Are you kidding me? What it would look like if Patrick Mahomes was on this team with that defense? And I like Andy Reid, but that schematic coaching advantage, what it would look like? Yeah. It would look like an undefeated team that is the overwhelming favorites to win the Super Bowl, as opposed to a team that has a gaudy record but is about to be 0-3 against the three teams in the conference that matter: the Ravens, the Texans, and in 4 days the Kansas City Chiefs.
You're telling me that Patrick Mahomes hasn't benefited significantly from having arguably the best tight end and one of the most explosive receivers?
Absolutely, yeah.
But now when you put him into a group that doesn't have anywhere near that level of ability, you're telling me that he's going to elevate those guys. When his weapons aren't available, Everybody's talking about the fact that it's so challenging
really?
For him.
Yes. Because before he hurt his knee, Tyreek Hill went out in week one. He didn't have him the entire time, and he was the best quarterback statistically in football. The Patriots lost their center. The Chiefs lost the number one overall pick left tackle for 8 weeks. No one gives a damn. Like, pardon me. They lost when they lost their left tackle, they also lost their left guard. Does anyone know? No, because teams lose offensive line into injury every week in this league. But because we are grasping for reasons why Tom Brady's gone 2 months without a great game, it's like, well, what do you expect him to do? Well, I mean, what do you expect him to do with an all-time great defense and the greatest coach ever and the best home field advantage in sports? It can't be his fault when it's clearly partially his fault.
Well, the Patriots certainly need to get back to running the football. That's what they did well last year. Yeah. Without Gronk on the edge, I think that's a little bit of an issue. Coach, I want to ask you a question, though. When you talk about the coaching matchup, Andy Reid versus Bill Belichick, who do you give the edge in that matchup?
Well, look, I love Andy Reid, and I think that Andy Reid puts together offensive schemes that are incredibly challenging because it's shifting, it's motioning, it's gadget formations, it's things that define man and zone where he's got three wide receivers, the one side and the tight end on the backside, and he's always created a lot of challenges, but they've faced each other for a long time. So each time you see a guy again, there's going to be different things that come into play. My question for Kansas City is how well are they going to handle the line games mm-hmm. that New England has incorporated more and more throughout the course of this year and has created a ton of problems for people they played.
And Belichick has a coaching edge over everyone. Yes. But one thing that John Harbaugh has in his favor is I don't think he's intimidated by going up against Belichick. I don't think Andy Reid is either. If you were the game that everyone 6 years ago said, oh, it's the end of the Patriot era, was against an Andy Reid team. They're 106-1 since Brady took over when they have a halftime lead at home. The one was against Alex Smith and Kansas City Chiefs in 2017. Both games last year, the Chiefs had leads in the fourth quarter. I think Belichick has a coaching edge over everyone in the world. I don't think it's that it's not as big of a discrepancy against Andy Reid as it is against other coaches, and he has some level of success.
And I think your comments about New England having an all-time great defense is a little bit deceptive, too, based off of who they played earlier in the season. I think you're seeing now more in line with where that defense is as they face offenses that are a lot more explosive.
Not only did the Patriots face coaches these last 2 weeks that weren't afraid of them, they faced defenses that weren't afraid of that offense. I'm not sure that Kansas City is a physical enough defense to handle some of those things.
First things first, we're now joined by Super Bowl champ Imani Toomer.
Thank you so much, Imani.
Thanks for having
Thanks
me.
So much for being
right.
the first time.
Yeah, definitely first time.
Super Bowl champ.
Yeah.
That's when I was playing in Philadelphia. Were you still in Philly then?
I was not in Philly. I was covering the Super Bowl champ.
Did you guys win one there?
Oh my God.
That's a shot to
awesome.
My heart.
Welcome
You're
to
close,
the
though.
Show.
You're close.
Well, all right.
Fine.
Thanks for
I
coming.
Like it.
Yeah.
Look, we're all in the NFC East, so let's keep it there. Man. Tough times Jeez, for the Dallas Louise. Cowboys these days, gentlemen. The team is struggling. The coach is on the hot seat, and Jerry Jones is woefully unsatisfied. Yesterday, when asked again about Jason Garrett's status, Jones chose his words carefully. Said Garrett will be coaching, quote, in the NFL next year. Didn't say for the Cowboys, the NFL. Nick, you had Cowboys legend Terrell Owens on your SiriusXM radio show last night, and he said Garrett was to blame for the Cowboys' struggles.
You have to attribute that to the head coach. Again, you can't just point fingers at the players. The players are really a byproduct of the coach. You're only going to do and go as far as your head coach leads you. It's been the same old story, you know, with Jason Garrett and the Dallas Cowboys team year after year after year. I've been saying it since I left, and I haven't backed away from it. So, again, at the end of the day, Jerry has to, at some point, bite the bullet and understand that this guy, he is not the answer.
Nick, is T.O. right?
Well, yes, and you don't to steal a line from old LeVar Burton on Reading Rainbow. You don't have to take my word for it. Take Jerry Jones's word for it. If any public service announcement, if any of our or your employers are ever asked about your status moving forward and they're like, well, it'll be working somewhere next year, you are screwed.
Right.
It is a wrap for you, B. And so the idea that the Cowboys are not moving on from Jason Garrett, I think we can now set it aside And Amani, the reason they have to, even if you want to, not you, but the generic use, people want to argue, actually, Jason Garrett's a good coach, is because the players are not going to change next year. They're going to bring Dak back. I believe they're going to bring Amari back. Every other frontline player is signed multiple years. So if you're not going to be able to change the personnel, there's what is the other fundamental shift you can make? They've already changed out offensive coaching staff. They a few years ago changed out defensive coaching staff. Like there's only one card left to play. It's not going to be a rebuild. It's going to try to be a regrouping to where they were a couple years ago, and it's going to be through firing the head coach.
Well, I think you got to understand why Jerry Jones stuck with Jason Garrett for so long as it is. It's a personality thing. You know, he won. They won three Super Bowls in 4 years, but he didn't like the fact that he didn't like the way the coach took most of the credit for the victory. So this is a situation where he's there. Jason Garrett is there because of the fact that he gets along well with Jerry Jones. He knows how to make Jerry Jones feel comfortable. He doesn't overstep his bounds. And that's why he's been there for so long. Because, you know, I like Jason Garrett. I think Jason Garrett, I played with Jason Garrett with the Giants. I credit him for helping me, you know, have one of my better seasons. So I wouldn't say that the problem in Dallas, I wouldn't say it's Jason Garrett. I think it's easy to say it's Jason Garrett. But this team is just not very good. I think they have a lot of players that are good players. I don't think they have a lot of great players. I think there are players that that check the box in the NFC East, but when you go outside the NFC East and you play against the rest of the league, they just don't match up. And you can put as much, you can try to make them as good as you want them to be, but I just don't think this team, I think they are where they are because you are where your
talent
leaves
you. So you don't think they're underachieving given their talent level?
I don't, because we look at where the teams that they win or they beat this year are all teams that are, you know, 500 or below or teams in the NFC East.
Is that because they're underachieving because their coach isn't pushing them the right way? Or is that because these guys are just not good enough? Because when I look at Amari Cooper, I see one of the top 5-6 receivers in the game. When I see the progression of Dak, I'm seeing a quarterback that has gotten much better, top 5 quarterback in the league, and a defense that has been underwhelming these last few weeks. Zeke, of course, he's a top 5 running back as well. And you paid your offensive line a bunch of money. So they certainly have some talent, I think. I think they've underachieved. There's two questions you got to ask yourself. Who will want to coach for a team where their owner comes out in week 12, week 13, and says these types of things? Who would want to coach for that? Because now we're still in the playoff hunt. In fact, we're leading the NFC East for opportunity to make it into the playoffs. Who would want to coach there? And the other one would be, what would be the answer? What would be the one thing that would make Jason Garrett stay there, right? The playoffs, making the playoffs, of course, and winning the Super Bowl. Of course, he has to come back after that. Is this team ready to make a playoffs? Potentially. Are they ready to win a Super Bowl right now? Absolutely not, especially the way that they've played lately. They can't do either one of those things. And so I think the answer for Jason Garrett is that he probably won't be here next year.
I think Jason Garrett is the scapegoat. He's the easiest person to fire is the head coach, you know, or the quarterback, right? They like Dak. They think Dak is on an upward trend. But I just think that you look at this team and you talk about all their talent. Amari Cooper, he's a great player. Is he top five? I don't know if he's top five. You got to remember when he was at when he was with the Raiders, he was a shadow of himself for years,
bad
right?
Bad quarterbacking.
So he comes back to, you know, to Dallas. He plays a lot better, and all of a sudden people think he is where he was his rookie year. I think he's a good player. I wouldn't put him in the top five in the league. I think there's other, I'm not, no slight against him, but being in the top five, you can't just have one good season. You have to have a couple good seasons stacked upon each other to prove that that's how you are, not to fluke. So I don't want to take anything away from Amari Cooper, but I would let him develop into the player that he could be instead of just giving him this title of top five. I think the Dallas Cowboys shed that light on people and give them and elevate them higher than they really are.
Here's the problem, though, for Jason Garrett, even if you're correct. Jerry and his son Steven clearly believe this team's more talented than you do.
Yes.
Because they have paid them as such. The Cowboys, the reason the Cowboys can't deal with injuries, I don't think that's coaching, by the way. I think that is the way they've built their team. When you have as many frontline, high-paid players, the reason the Patriots, every year, the way they build their roster is they have a bigger middle class than any team in football. They have a ton of like $4 to $7 million a year guys because aside from Gilmore and Brady, nobody's making above $15 million. Mm-hmm. The Cowboys done the opposite. You got the highest paid offensive line in football. You gave Zeke his money. You gave DeMarcus Lawrence his money. You gave Jalen Smith his money. And we're talking about them even doubling down even further on that strategy with a contract for Dak or Amari or Byron Jones or at least two of those three. And so the guys who've picked the players are the people who are going to decide on the head coach, and they don't want to blame themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't want to say, we made bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And even if they did make bad decisions, there's no way out of those. Yeah. Most of those contracts, they're going to be there the next couple years. I think, despite what you guys are saying, though, about the meddling Jason or Jerry Jones does with the head coach, I think this is a great job. Not only because of the talent of the roster, but yeah, Jerry Jones this year, he has come out and had some very critical in this last comment. It's just a death blow to Jason Garrett. But Belichick, Harbaugh, Tomlin, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, the only five coaches in the league who have had their job longer than Jason Garrett's had his. You can't say that Jerry Jones has not been patient with Jason Garrett. And if I'm a head coach, if I'm on the market, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to be at the highest profile teams. For some guys, that's not their personality. Some guys would love it. Mm-hmm. There's no salary cap on coaches. They got bottomless pockets in Dallas. And I have this talent on my roster. And at least this decade, they've been very patient with their head coach. To me, it's a great job.
You don't have final say in that locker. Yeah. You never have final say. When you walk in there, you're not the man. The man is the guy that's standing behind you. And a lot of coaches want to be able to have that authority in a locker room that you can motivate a team. And it doesn't have to be my word, but wait, Jerry Jones will be behind me in 5 minutes. It's really his word. Yeah. That's what you agree to when you sign on to coach the Dallas Cowboys. Am I right?
You are, but I just never bought into the thing that where a head coach can make me play any better. Like, I never played in the NFL for a head coach. I played for my teammates and I played for myself. And also, going to Nick's point, when you talk about the way that they built this team, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's the Sean Lee situation, right? Like, remember when Sean Lee was their defensive stopper in the middle? And when he was out, team was terrible. Now they got Vander Esch. Mm-hmm. The same thing. Like, Sean Lee's older. Vander Esch is their guy that they feel that can stop, you know, that can create a lot of tackles and do all that stuff. So I think that you're right in that sense, in that it's not really about, I think that they're not very judicious with who they give their money to, and they don't spread it out evenly. They high end, and then they have a whole bunch of guys that probably shouldn't even be in the league on the team.
That's the owner making those decisions, and that's why you have to be worried if you're the coach, because now he's just going to play the top end guys, and those middle guys that you speak of, they won't be on the football team.
They built this team the way the best European soccer and basketball and NBA teams are built. Let's worry about the very top of the roster. The rest will figure itself out. It does not work typically in a sport as violent as football. Mm-hmm. When injuries are such a big part of your sport, having your team built that way, it looks good preseason every year. Mm-hmm. And then once the actual real games start being played, it's a very difficult way to win.
They need to be like the Saints, you know, getting Bridgewater.
Yes.
You know, that's the kind of decision that teams who are going to be successful can withstand a big hit at quarterback, like Drew Brees. Yeah, so I think that's one of the reasons why Cowboys are there.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.